7:40 here on News Radio Pensacola. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Alex Andrade is our state representative for House District 2. That is the southern portion of Escambia County and the most southern beachfront, basically, portions of Santa Rosa County. Alex, welcome back to the show, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew.
Good morning. Good to have you. So, you and I were talking yesterday about something that had been brought to your attention by one of our local sheriffs, and I want you to tell them what you told me, because it's amazing, quite frankly.
Yeah, and it's ultimately it's just a bizarre loophole that now we're trying to address. So Sheriff Johnson a couple days ago gave me a call and said, "Hey, we're seeing an uptick in our traffic stops of vehicles that are registered in the driver's name, but that driver is not here in the country legally. They're an illegal immigrant. They don't have a driver's license and often don't have car insurance. So what is going on? We're not sure. How are illegal immigrants able to get these license plates and vehicles registered?" So I called Scott Lunsford over in Escambia County, and he told me that the tax collector's offices are seeing an uptick in people showing up with passports that have been freshly issued from the Orlando consulate of the Mexican consulate in Orlando. By law, by rule, by agency rule at the Department of Highway Safety Motor Vehicles, all you need is a passport as your identification to get your tag and title issued by tax collectors. So it's a situation right now because the tax collectors aren't able to run those names when a passport's used to get tag and title, where, you know, the state, by our process, is having to issue these tag and title to vehicles to illegal immigrants. And then I think that's part of the reason why we keep seeing these stories about illegal immigrants getting in car accidents or causing deaths. And it's something that we need to try and address as soon as possible.
Wait a minute. you're telling me that we have people illegally crossing the border, going to the Mexican consulate in Orlando, the consulate whipping out its basement printing press for passports, pardon my embellishment, issuing them a passport, then they're going to the tax collector's office and getting a car registration, which the tax collector's office must process because a passport is a valid identification, no driver's license necessary, no ability to check to see if they're here in the country legally, no proof of insurance. But because they have a passport from a foreign country, we have to issue them a registration for that car. Am I hearing this right?
That's what the evidence is kind of showing right now. There's two big questions that I obviously needed help with.
So this is legal. This is legal. Right now, this is legal. There's nothing to prevent this. It's actually required.
Yeah. The two questions obviously are: has there been an uptick in passports being issued by the Mexican consulates in the state? There's one in Miami and Orlando. And what is the process for verifying car insurance? Because when you apply for a vehicle registration, you at least have to say that you have car insurance and maybe list some numbers. I don't know if that's fully verified or if they have the ability to verify that.
Okay.
What I do know is that the state has a contract with USCIS. It's the database to confirm whether or not someone is here in the country legally. Law enforcement often has access to that, but our tax collectors don't when they're issuing tag and title. So I reached out to Congressman Gates and Senator Scott yesterday. What I'm hoping can get done is the federal government can modify the contract with the state to allow our tax collectors to start running that, running those names through that database to confirm. And then also, I think the fastest solution right now is to at least try and make sure and verify the car insurance that's listed on these applications, because I don't know each private company exactly how they verify if someone has a driver's license to get their vehicle insurance. I can tell you that for motorcycles, you're not required to have insurance. So someone, an illegal immigrant right now, doesn't even have to show they have insurance to get a registration for a motorcycle. But this is a serious situation where we're potentially, because of this kind of bizarre loophole, allowing people without driver's licenses for sure, and often without car insurance, to be driving on our roads when they, aren't even in the country legally.
Yeah, I just want to make sure I heard you right. The database to verify legal status that the tax collector has access to in order to issue, that is only a database that they are allowed to query for licenses. They're not allowed to query that for registrations. Did I hear you on that distinction?
Yeah, when you apply for your driver's license, you have the Real ID database, which obviously interfaces with other databases like USCIS. You can run names through USCIS right now, but only for limited purposes because the federal government has a contract with the state that prevents certain uses of that database. There's no valid use right now under that contract for tax collectors to verify citizenship before issuing tag and title, and that's something that needs to change as quickly as possible.
Okay. Yeah, no, definitely. All right. Wow. So, but I suppose the one small good takeaway is you're aware of it. The congressman and the senator, they're aware of it. We're working on the problem. And there may be a sort of a quick term solution in terms of actually verifying this proof of insurance, which, you know, maybe had not been done or was not able to be done previously. That can happen without legislation. So that's good news. Aside from my astounding stunnedness, I guess, at the other story, I'm glad you guys are working on it. Wow, I just don't know what to say. It's amazing. The other question I had for you is, obviously, you're well aware of incorporation. It seems to be the hot issue for District 2. Last year with Perdido and this year with Navarre. I don't know if like it's in vogue, although Navarre has been trying it for years. Something that came up in the conversation about incorporation the other day in Santa Rosa County Commission meeting, I thought was actually a very good question, was why does it have to be this way? Why does it have to be at the whim or will of the legislator? Why can't it be like running for office where you just go get your signatures or pay your fee and then you're in? You have a vote and you're done. Why does it have to be this kind of weird who wants what process, straw polls, all of that kind of stuff?
Well, I can say, first and foremost, the most dangerous words in government are, this is how we've always done it, right? It's not just like I'm from the government here to help. It's this is how we've always done it. That's the most dangerous phrase in government. And unfortunately, our statute's not been updated. And we do, because I think you described it as a paternalistic system where, you know, these folks who want to get a question on the ballot have to subject themselves to a paternalistic arbitrary system where, you know, it's like, whose line is it anyway? The rules are made up
and the points don't matter
or something.
That's right.
Yeah. And that's the situation we have. I think we'd be far better off if we had incorporation questions addressed more similarly to constitutional amendment questions, where you have a certain percentage of the voting population that has to sign a petition. It's nowhere near 50%. I think for constitutional amendments, it's 10% of the voting population. I think that if we had a situation where for incorporation to get the question on the ballot for a vote, if you got, you know, say 15 or 20% of the voting population of the proposed area to sign a petition, and then you had your feasibility study checked by the Florida Department of Revenue and any other state agency that might need to check it, you should be able to have that question addressed just because it's not a question of whether or not it's going to pass, right? You shouldn't have to say, well, you can only have this question on the ballot if we know that more than 50% of people are going to vote
right.
for it. That's a ridiculous system. But you have to ask the question, is this a valid question that the voter should decide? And I think that the petition method is a far better method. Unfortunately, right now, it doesn't exist. It would have to require a statutory change. And that's something that Jerry Williamson took up one time. I don't know if it had a Senate sponsor. It didn't go anywhere. This is something that I really do want to address because I'm tired of, you know, having to answer folks who don't want incorporation and telling them why, even though I might agree with them, you know, it should be on the ballot. And I'm tired of being put in the position of being accused of supporting or opposing incorporation just because I'm trying to address the question of whether or not it should be in the ballot at all. I don't think that's a position that, you know, partisan elected officials should be in because then it's a disservice to voters. There's potentially some valid circumstances where incorporation should happen. I don't happen to think if I lived in Perdido or Navarre, I'd personally vote for incorporation. But, like, again, my personal bias, my personal subjective opinion should not be the deciding factor for whether or not a question is put on the ballot.
Right.
I'm my plan right now is as long as I'm reelected to office for my last term, I'll try and pass a law to make it far more similar to the constitutional amendment process than to this kind of weird paternalistic arbitrary process we have today.
Yeah, because I mean, it's so odd. The like, first of all, there's no regularity which legislator wants you to do which thing in which order. And as you say, you know, you shouldn't have to be like, please, mother, may I, you know, have a vote on this thing? You know, please, yeah. Please, sir, may I have some more democracy? you know, like yeah. that's just it, not the way our system right is now, supposed to work.
It really is. The rules are made up and the points don't matter in this incorporation system we have right now.
It's crazy.
And it's something that should change. You know, the Supreme Court weighs in on the language for a constitutional amendment, and so long as you get your petitions and they're valid and you don't break the law when you're collecting them, you should have the question on the ballot. The same way, you know, if you really think incorporation is going to solve the problems in your community, I think so long as you're honest about the effects of incorporation and you collect your petitions and you do it in an honest and sincere way, you should have that question answered on the ballot.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I'm glad to hear that you're kind of ahead of the curve on this and, you know, thinking about how you might remedy that in the future anyway. Hey, last thing, just because, you know, I know we're still waiting on the budget, but, you know, you and I were talking a little bit off the air before you came on. And one of the huge win, at least I think it's a huge win for our college system and university and like Pensacola State and UWF and everybody else is a health insurance funding change, right?
Yeah, and the best part about Senator Broxton being my counterpart in the Senate is that he took care of all these big issues so I could focus on the little things, like a few million dollars here or there for our community. He was able to get $80 million recurring into the state budget that hasn't been signed yet, but God willing it will be, to bring Pensacola State College and every state college in the state, their instructional staff, onto the state health insurance system, which they were not right now. What that will allow is for better recruitment of better staff members at these state colleges. Right now, there was a real-world example where a UWF professor left UWF to co-work at Pensacola State College. They got a salary pay bump, but they ended up losing money in the move because they didn't realize just how much more their health insurance for their family was going to cost when they left that state health insurance system. So for Senator Broxton to get $80 million in recurring funds into the state budget for our state college system was a massive legacy-defining win, one of the many he was able to get this year.
Oh, that's fantastic news. And as you say, God willing, the governor signs it. I appreciate it. Alex Andrade is our state representative for District 2. Alex, good to talk to you again. Thanks for the time. And we look forward to an update on the Mexican illegal passport mill coming out of Orlando, letting them buy cars and drive on the road, whether they have insurance or legal status. Yikes. That's all I can say.
Alex, whodunit. Yeah.
Thanks for the time, sir.